Welcome into No Nonsense, a Tennessee Titans podcast, your place to go for on-demand Titans coverage that is 100% free of the nonsense that we always see in sports talk these days. I'm Luke Worsham, joined by the other two hosts of No Nonsense, Matthias Wadner and Will Lomas. We're back this week to recap the Titans draft class. We started doing that a week ago, and we didn't finish because there was so much to talk about, so we're going to talk about the players who we didn't get a chance to dive into last week. We're also going to get into this Ryan Tannehill business. And if you've not been living under a rock and you're a Titans fan, you know exactly what I'm talking about. The comments he made at his press conference the Monday after the draft about, mentoring Malik Willis and being in a really dark place after the playoff loss. We're going to get in to all of those things today, and I know that Will is thrilled, especially about the Ryan Tannehill conversation, and Will, you're not working on a whole lot of sleep heading into this episode.
No, I was one of the lucky people to go to the Predators game, so I ended up with about 2 hours of sleep between Monday at 5:30 and I guess right now, so you can tell my patience is infinite today. So we'll see how this goes.
How much sleep have you gotten since Monday? We're recording this on Tuesday. Since Monday at 5 a.m.?
Since Monday at 5 a.m.?
Yeah.
2.5 hours, maybe?
Yes.
Something like that.
Yes. So this is the episode where I'm going to get to say all of my opinions, and Will is going to be too lethargic to fight back on them.
I need like a soundboard where I can just like click it, because of all the things I've already argued with you about, and yeah, just I can just push it and insert comment here.
So, guys, let's pick up where we left off. We talked a lot, of course, about Treylon Burks. We talked about the one third round pick. I'm already lost.
Well, no, we have two.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Had two. Yeah.
And the two third-round picks being Nicholas Petit-Frere, the offensive lineman, and the quarterback, Malik Willis. We talked a little bit about Roger McCreary, so let's start. We may come back to McCreary, but let's start in round four with running back Hassan Haskins. And of all the Titans picks in this draft, this may be my favorite, the Hassan Haskins pick, because I think Haskins is really your Deontay Foreman replacement. We talked about it before the draft that they had to find someone who, should anything happen to Derrick Henry, or should Derrick Henry get tired within the course of a game, they had to have someone who can run the ball between the tackles. We like Dontrell Hilliard. He's not that. Hassan Haskins is that. But beyond the running, dude is a freaky special teams guy. Now, for now, he hasn't. Craig Aukerman hadn't gotten his hands on him yet. But Hassan Haskins, I think it was a really good pick for them in the fourth round.
Yeah, initially when it happened, I wasn't too big a fan of the pick, just because of kind of the positional value. And also, I liked some of the receivers and tight ends that were still on the board, like Calvin Austin and Isaiah Likely. I thought they should have gone in that direction, but it really doesn't surprise me that they felt the need to take a running back there, and a running back who, like you said, has special teams value also, but was supremely productive in the 1 year where he really got a chance to be the main guy at Michigan. And the other 2 years, like, he was churning out big plays. Chunk gains, you know, in the Big Ten, which is a tough conference. So I like the pick more the more that time goes by. I think he's going to be a very good contributor. And if he's as good as it seems like he could be, and I mean, I was listening to the NFL Network broadcasts, and when the Titans drafted him, Rich Eisen was just absolutely glowing about him. Rich Eisen, who obviously went to the University of Michigan, was glowing about him both as a player and as a person. So that got me pretty excited. And, you know, if Derrick Henry's body starts, you know, breaking down within these next couple of seasons, it's very possible that Haskins, if he, you know, was as good as we think he could be, could end up being the starting running back in a couple of years.
Yeah, and even if he hadn't, like, he fits. And I don't want to say it's necessarily a need, but he is what they like to have out on the field on third down. Because even if you like Derrick Henry on third down, which, you know, you can debate it, like, because he's not going to play 100% of the snaps. But I do understand the thought process of you want to have him out there if for no other reason than to make defenses think. But they just don't. That's not something Mike Vrabel, no matter which offensive coordinator they've had, it's not something that Mike Vrabel seems to want to happen. So if you're going to run an offense where he's on first and second down, and if it's not third and one, he's on the bench, then you need somebody who's a great pass protector. That's, I mean, Haskins is. You want somebody who can run if need be, which he can do. He's not a super nimble, like, receiver or whatever, but I think, I don't know if it's an Ohio State game. There's a couple of plays where you watch him against, like, legitimate competition, and he does, like, he'll run some angle routes or something like that. And, you know, he doesn't fight the ball when it hits it. Like, he's just not going to catch it in stride and break 10 tackles. But, like, he at least shows some functionality. And more than anything, he just doesn't go down on first contact. Like, this entire offense since John Robinson's been there has been predicated on, we want guys who can break tackles and get yards after the catch, and it's shown up in their draft, and he fits perfectly what they like. I mean, there's so many times where you just have to drag him down, like, he's not Jerome Bettis, but sort of that kind of guy where it's like, the first guy may slow him down, but the second guy's not just going to, like, pile on for a tackle. Like, if he's going to take him down, he's going to have to put forth effort. And, in that way, like, he makes a lot of sense. And maybe he's never the running back one. Like, maybe he is someday down the line. Like, you know, we'll see. But he fits stylistically what they want if they just want him as a third down back, or if they need him to actually take carries and replicate some version of what Henry does.
You know, it's funny, when we talked to Haskins after he got picked, John Glennon asked him about his receiving capabilities. He's like, you know, how are you with catching the ball out of the backfield? And he goes, I'm pretty good. I liked the honesty of that answer as opposed to, like, fake modesty, you know? So maybe he's right. Maybe he does have some ability in that area. But look, you know, we talk all the time with running back, and it was the big conversation when Derrick Henry was an impending free agent and potentially getting extended. The conversation is always, they're very replaceable. You can pick someone in the fourth round, and they're going to be fine and really good. I mean, look at the good running backs in the NFL. Very few of them were first-round draft picks. Well, for that to happen, for you to get the guy who's a fourth-round draft pick, who becomes a good player and a starter and a quality one, you have to first pick them in the fourth round. So that's why I really have no problem with them picking a running back in the fourth round, even though it is not, well, I think it was a need, but though they don't need a starting running back, clearly, because of Derrick Henry, I still like the pick because perhaps in the future, when you move on from Derrick Henry, you have someone who can play very well, or you have someone that prevents you from having to overwork Derrick Henry. I see this, assuming Haskins is a good player and doesn't just turn into a pumpkin, I see this as a pick that's going to be valuable for the Titans. And I'm sure you guys saw the videos that popped up as soon as they drafted him of this guy running down and just murdering people on special teams.
Yeah, I have liked all of the clips I've seen of his, and even like the pass pro ones. You know, he looks like a really good third down pass blocking, pass protection slash possible receiving option. Plus, you know, we've always talked about you need to have the you need to look or at least have the threat that you might hand the ball off on third down, which we wouldn't get back in the day with Deion Lewis, and really not with McNichols. McNichols was fine, but he really wasn't like a talented running back. But I think Haskins gives you that for sure because, you know, he's a very good natural runner. And yeah, I like this pick. I think it's going to end up being pretty valuable for the Titans, especially if they want to, you know, kind of limit Derrick Henry going forward and not give him such a big workload, especially with these long in seasons. And coming off an injury, I definitely think Haskins will play a role, at least on special teams. At least, you know, if he's not even a good running back, at least he drafted a good special teams player in the fourth round, which honestly, I think it's Will that says it, or like someone says that the draft is over after the third round. Like everything after that is pretty much just, okay, just find a player that, you know, can hang around for a couple of years and contribute in some way.
Yeah, like that is my philosophy, and other people have said it too. I don't want to take sole credit for it, but historically, if you look after pick like 100, it's you're almost as likely to get somebody at 101 as you are in the middle of the seventh round. Like, you know, in terms of like actual like long term starters, you're just kind of taking guys you like and trying to fit, you know, pieces into your offense, defense, or special teams and try to make excuses for them to stay on the roster. So, I mean, that's one of the reasons I like John Robinson so much, because he's hit on so many of those day three picks when a lot of people don't, but that's a conversation for a different time. I will say the last kind of note on Haskins is when you look at Dane Brugler's scouting report of him, he notes that he got voted like, quote, toughest player of the year by his teammates in 21. He's well-respected in the locker room because of his work ethic and determination. He has a bunch of special team snaps. And when you look at that, like, if I just copied and pasted the strength list and put it, like, blankly in front of you, you would say that's a Titans type of player. Like, picks up knees, drives through contact, making him difficult to tackle. Big-bodied back with power in his legs, lower half and torso. Like, I mean, it's like all things that you're like, oh, yeah, that's what Mike Vrabel's going to love. So, yeah, like he seems like a guy who fits the style that's worked for them in the past. And I don't know if we'll talk about it in this podcast or not, but this draft class is very much, let's go back to what worked. And that this is one of the picks that really clarifies that.
I want to expound on that, Will. What do you mean by that? And I think I agree with your sentiment. I'd just like you to explain more. What do you mean by go back to what works?
So one of the questions that was really interesting, I mean, I don't know if it's interesting, but it was interesting to hear John Robinson respond to it, was before the draft, when it may have been Stillman or somebody asked him like why the 2019 class was so good.
That was Jared.
Yeah. And he said, you know, because we picked the right guys. And, you know, that sounds like an oversimplification, but it's also like, you can look back at that class and the classes before that and say, like, okay, there's a clear, you know, set of things that they look for, right? So, like, let's start with Burks. Like, Treylon Burks, like, a yak machine, 2 years of elite production in the SEC, like, that checks off, you know, all the boxes. Like, you can look at his market share, too, which is something that I think Robinson likes, which production is cool, but having a like a large market share of your production and putting up great numbers is historically really telling, because it means that you're the focal point of your offense and you're putting up, you know, you're not the best player on a bad offense. You're an elite player who is the guy who defenses look at and say, okay, we've got to stop that guy, and they clearly don't. So, you know, Treylon Burks, it fits that. McCreary, almost more than any pick we should have seen coming. Like, if you told me, if I didn't know the roster at all, he would have been the guy that checks the most boxes. Like, SEC guy, check. Like, there was a period, you know, 2019 was one of them, where the first two rounds of the draft, I think they had 7 out of 8 players or something like that were from the SEC, and the one guy who wasn't was Harold Landry. So, like, that they just spent their first two picks, you know. In 2020, it was Isaiah Wilson, who sucked, but also Christian Fulton, who's great. You know, it's like, it just like, I think Caleb Farley was the first one that really broke that kind of mold. But anyway, McCreary, SEC guy, like, feisty run defense guy, can play inside and out, which is cool. Ton of pass breakups, which has always been a big thing for the Titans. Like, when you go back to like Adoree Jackson and like even guys like LaShawn Sims, like they all have tons of pass breakups and a moderate number of career interceptions, and they also play a lot of games. And so, you know, that all of those things point towards McCreary. Petit Frere is, I mean, he's not Jack Conklin, because Jack Conklin was way stronger and cleaner, but he's a guy who, he should be a right tackle, like, in terms of the classic description. He was forced to play, like, he played right tackle for a while. He was forced to play left tackle because he was simply the best offensive lineman on his team, and that's how his team decided to use him, even though it was a disservice. And really, the only time he struggled was against elite players, but he's deceptively quick in like short areas. He, you know, is a perfect zone blocker. He's got a mean enough disposition. Like, he's physical. Like, that's an old school kind of thing. Malik Willis is an outlier, just because he was such weird value that I think they just snatched him up. But Haskins, we just talked about, like, I can talk more about the other guys as we go, but you can just like go through and check like all of these things. Even into the sixth round with like the last picks, like those are guys you can see similar prospects drafted in John Robinson's history. So I think this is what worked for us in the past. I know we don't necessarily need a corner, but we use a lot of dime. Like, he's going to get on the field, and he's a guy that checks all our boxes. Let's lean him instead of forcing, you know, one of these wide receivers that we think is really a third round grade. But we'll force him up because, you know, everybody says we need a receiver, and now we're scrambling to draft somebody to replace AJ. Like, it seems like it was a more composed list of their guys, with the only exception being Willis, who I think they love in the interview, but who is not, there's no comparison for that historically.
Matias, what do you think? Because I think this makes sense to me, especially considering, you know, the 2019 draft was so good. Just about every pick was a hit. Jeffrey Simmons, A.J. Brown, David Long are the three that come to mind immediately. But also you had Nate Davis and Monty Hooker. And then 2020 and 2020 was a disaster. 2021, you know, all right, but it hadn't really panned out, at least in year one. And there doesn't seem to be, for some of them, a great amount of hope. So maybe you need to go back to something of the past that worked.
Yeah, it does kind of seem like they went back to basics. And even in 2021, there were a couple picks that, you know, seemed a little out of left field. The Monty Rice one, not necessarily, because, you know, he went to Georgia. But that one took some of us a little bit by surprise. And then the Des Fitzpatrick one, super weird, didn't really line up with John Robinson's previous picks just because of the production profile. Racy McMath and Brady Breeze, just pure special teams players who really like didn't have great prospects in terms of being contributors at the next level aside from special teams. So those were weird. I think in this draft, like, I don't think any of those picks really showed up. And I think they were pretty clear on what they want to do, especially once the AJ Brown trade got materialized. They just went right. They went right in. They drafted Treylon Burks. They were like, here's our replacement. There we go. And then, you know, they kind of just went with what has worked in the past. I think the prospects make a lot of sense. All of them are really high character guys from everything that we've heard. And by all accounts, I really haven't heard anything negative from any of these players. And they've also set themselves up very well for the future, I think. I mean, the Malik Willis pick We'll see. But they at least gave themselves an option if you know, his talent and potential does end up revealing itself over the next couple of years. And all the other picks, like, they seem like not home runs, but very solid picks that are going to be able to contribute right away and going into the future for sure.
So let's move forward beyond Hassan Haskins. And I want to talk a little bit about Chig
Okonkwo.
That's it. Okonkwo. No, you had it.
Okonkwo. You know, that's kind of exactly what I think they needed at tight end. I had said that they needed to take a plus athlete who they could let develop behind Austin Hooper, similarly to how they let Jonnu Smith develop behind Delanie Walker years ago, and it worked out very well for them in that case. And I think this has potential to work out because Chig, it was the fastest tight end of this class, ran a 40-yard dash in the 4.5s. But there is some rawness to his game, needs to be reined in a little bit, and also tight end just tends to be a position where it takes some time. So I think that it would have been hard for the Titans to do better with tight end, because they really hit what they needed to. They didn't take one too high. They didn't waste an earlier pick on one because they do have their starter already for 2022. But at the same time, they picked one high enough to where they got enough athletic potential.
Yeah, I think when the combine happened, and I mean, Okonkwo just lit it up. Obviously, you said the 40-yard dash, but he also had some other testing metrics that kind of popped, you know, and once that happened, I think most of us were just like, man, he looks like Jonnu Smith. And it kind of did seem like he's a guy that the Titans would like, just because he really does fit into that athletic mold of a Jonnu Smith. Of course, he doesn't have the production that Jonnu had at FIU, and I don't think he's as much of a polished prospect. But I mean, the athletic traits are just absolutely tantalizing. And I do think he's a good fit for the Titans, just because he's so much different than the other tight ends that they have. Like, Austin Hooper is very much a two-way kind of guy, but a very smooth receiver. Jeff Swaim, you know, is Jeff Swaim, but he's not athletic at all. And Okonkwo could give you that different dynamic whenever you need it. And I think it's a great pick. I really do think he fits well. I think they're going to be able to use him in a lot of ways. I mean, Maryland used him as not a running back, but they used him on running plays, at least in his freshman year. He scored two touchdowns on those. So, I mean, we've seen the Titans do that in the past with Delanie Walker. We've seen him doing with Jonnu Smith. So he's definitely a guy that I think Todd Downing will like to use in different ways and see if he could get some mismatches on some of these slower linebackers. So I'm excited about this pick. I do like that he was productive in his final season, where he was, you know, the full-time tight end. Obviously, Maryland is not exactly an offensive powerhouse, so I really can't hold that against him. But I like the pick, and I'm intrigued to see how he does in his rookie season, because Hooper's only on a one-year contract. So we could be looking at Okonkwo being, you know, a full-time starter as soon as 2023.
Yeah, like, I'm looking at this right now, if you hear clicks, just because it's so interesting. Go back and look at his RAS score, and the first comparison name that they have is Delanie Walker. Like, I know you talked about that a lot, like, I know we've talked about Jonnu Smith a lot, but it's so crazy how eerily similar these two are. Like,
meaning Chig John and Delanie.
Chig and Delanie. So
John's
like,
comp was Delanie Walker also. Like, they clearly have a type at the position.
Look at this. Y'all can go check it out if you want to, because the color coding helps a lot. But it's like, Chig 6'2.5". Delanie Walker just over 6'1". Weight for Chig, 238, 240 for Walker. Then it's 4.52 for Chig, 4.54 for Delanie Walker. And then it's just like splits, 265, 267, 15 for a 10-yard split, 157, 161. Then the vertical is 35.5, 36.5. Broad jump, 9 feet 9 inches, 9 feet 10 inches. Short shuttle, 445, 46. 3 cone, 719, 723. I mean, like, they are so incredibly similar that now something that made Delanie Walker really good is he had the mindset that he wanted to be a physical blocker and then he wanted to make plays after the catch. But that's not something that you don't see from Chig at Maryland. Like, I mean, he does, like, they use him on jet sweeps and all that kind of stuff. Like the same weird stuff that you're like, well, that'll never work. And then you see Delanie Walker do it and you're like, oh, okay. Sometimes that works, even though you may not want to make that a staple. But like, I mean, they use him as like a wing and have him block when he's like split off the line. Like he does so many things that I don't really think he gets enough credit for. He wasn't one of the top guys left on my composite board going into day three. Like, because that's not my rankings or anything, but I included him in the list of like the 10 players that I thought the Titans should really consider drafting. And just because he is so, again, their type of guy. Like, we talk about finding historical comparisons for things that have worked in the past. Well, you know, signing Delanie Walker really worked for the Titans in the past. So, you know, repeating that or finding somebody on that spectrum of athleticism with traits you want and with a mindset that you like, that's awesome. Like, so I don't know if it was my favorite pick just from, because I really like Treylon Burks, but like just in terms of he's going to be really fun to watch and he could be great. Like, he and Treylon Burks really stand out as guys where I'm like excited to see them play.
I want to talk about Kyle Phillips a little bit because it is weird to me. Well, it's not weird, but it is problematic that so many fans look at a fourth round wide receiver. He was a fourth rounder, right? Not a fifth?
Fifth round. Fifth.
Look at a fifth round wide receiver. And immediately in their heads, he is the man. Because the amount of Titans fans and even some media I saw after the draft acting as though Kyle Phillips is a surefire day one starter, impact player, everything you could want and more out of a slot wide receiver. It's like, okay, if all that is true, then why in the world was he a fifth-round draft pick? Now, look, I agree. The skill set is intriguing. And he's got a good shot to be a valuable player for this team that helps them win games. But the amount of people who think, A, it's a sure thing. There is no chance that Kyle Phillips will not be terrific. But also, that are sure that he's going to make an impact right away. Like, let's pump the brakes a little bit on this guy, right?
You're talking about the same fan base that thinks Mason Kinsey is still going to be a thing.
No, those are fringe people. I don't think that is the fan base.
I know. But this does happen, like, very often. It's not only the Titans, like, media and fan base. Like, this happens around the NFL. They see, you know, a short, kind of quick white guy who profiles as a slot receiver because they're not very fast and not very tall. And they're just like, oh, he's going to come in and catch balls right away. And sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. But the reason he was a fifth round pick is because, you know, he's 5'11", 177, and he ran a 4.58 40, I think it was, or something like that. Like, his ceiling is very limited just because he's not overly athletic and he's not overly fast. So he's really kind of pigeonholed into being a specific type of receiver. And I do think that's what you have. Like, he very clearly just a solid type of slot guy, but he's also a fantastic punt returner. I think he was not, I don't know if he was the best in the nation during his time at UCLA, but he was very close to being one of the better ones in all of college football. So in terms of that, like, he can come in and be the punt returner right away, and whatever you get from him as a receiver, if he could just come in, get open every now and then, and catch a third down ball, move the chains, then you're absolutely happy because he's already giving you that punt return value out of a fifth round pick. So I'm not coming in expecting too much out of him, but I do think he's going to get playing time right away just because of that punt return ability, and also because the Titans' depth chart at wide receiver is pretty disgusting if we're going to be real about it after the first two. So, yeah.
Yeah, like, so here's the good and the bad of it, right? So to come in and act like he's a sure thing, like, first of all, number one overall picks aren't sure things. Like, we'll find that out in Jacksonville soon. But, like, you see guys come in every year who, you know, analysts say they're going to be great or whatever, and then they just disappear and nobody thinks about them again except for their fan base who's furious that they drafted them. So, you know, anybody can fail in the draft. It much worse on day three. So, no, like, I mean, he's not a sure thing, you know, future superstar, like, guaranteed or anything. Having said that, like, he led UCLA for three straight years in targets and receptions. He was one of, like, six players to have 10 touchdowns this year. He's had pretty good production, but he also, like, you know, like other players on here, like, really is more physical than you would think when you watch him. Like, I mean, he will just bury his head right in the chest of a defender. And, like, I mean, he's not big. Like, you know, depending on what, like, at his pro day, he weighed 181. At the combine, he weighed 189. Like, he's 5'11", like, a hair over 5'11". So, like, he's not an imposing receiver. But, I mean, he puts in the work, and they use him as a lead blocker on some of their, like, counters and sweeps and stuff. And it works. I mean, like, he just doesn't stop running his feet. So I can see why you watch him and like him, because, you know, he didn't test great. But, you know, if you didn't know the numbers, which, you know, you kind of have to suspend disbelief for a second. If you didn't look at the numbers, you would think that he ran faster than a 4.58. And, you know, to his credit, like, the rest of his athletic testing is really good. Like, he ran his 10-yard split. Was, like, again, I'm looking at the RAS here, was a 9.84, like, it was a 1.42 was the actual time, or sorry, 1.49 was the actual time, but out of 10, he performed in the 98th percentile. Like, so he's incredibly quick off the line, and you see that. He just doesn't have the long speed, or didn't that day for whatever reason. But, I mean, broad jump, 10 feet, that's 80th percentile, shuttle, 409, that's 89th percentile. Three cone, it was at 91st percentile. So, like, I mean, you can understand if you have a specific, if you're saying he's our slot receiver, then you can understand why that's such an easy path to success for him, because he is instantly quick. He does have years of production where he was an important chain mover for his team and they constantly relied on him. Like, I mean, you can see the reasons why people like him, and he has a lot of the testing to back that up, but he's also 5'11 and ran a 4.58. So you're not going to win a lot of starting jobs on the boundary with those measurables. So you're automatically limited to inside in the slot, which means that if you're ever on a team that runs two tight ends, you're on the sideline, you know. You basically turn yourself into a slot receiver or, like, a dime defensive back. Like, you reduce your value to a team based off of how many snaps you can play. But, you know, smart teams will find ways to get those guys on the field. And he blocks well enough where, you know, you can make the excuse that he can be on the field on rundowns and he can be out there because he's going to give you something, and that's enough to make defenses actually take you seriously.
I I don't know what my problem is with it. I like Kyle Phillips. It was a good pick, but it's a fifth rounder. Like, am I missing something to where everyone immediately was just like, oh my gosh, this guy. Who cares that Nick Westbrook-Ikhine is the third best receiver? Because they got Kyle Phillips.
Well, like, he's Hunter Renfrow, right? Like, I mean, his athletic comp is Julian Edelman, but that's the whole thing, right? Is like, if you commit to him as a slot receiver, like, you know, is he Adam Humphries? Like, that type of range?
Well, Adam Humphries is not Julian Edelman. Julian Edelman was terrific. Adam Humphries has been just kind of,
Well, Adam Humphries had 800 yards before he came to, like, the Titans, like, more run-heavy schemes. So, I mean, and then got concussions. So, like, I hear you. Hunter Renfrow was great this year. So, like, I don't know. Like, is he a guy that you say, okay, we're going to replace him after his rookie contract, but he's a really cheap, like, Cole Beasley, like, that kind of guy with, you know, better opinions? Like, it's like, is that what you're gonna make him? Because if so, cool, like, that works. Now, like you said, but I mean, those guys get found every year on day three of the draft, you know, so do eight other guys who nobody ever hears from again. So it's not like it's a sure thing, but you're much more likely to find a slot receiver on day three than you are a boundary receiver. So if you're going to draft somebody who's going to catch passes, you want either an athletic tight end, an athletic running back, or a slot receiver who you can plug and play because they show that they can do all the little things right on tape.
Yeah, that makes sense. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to wrap up this discussion about the Titans draft class. We'll have Will perhaps enlighten us on some undrafted free agents. We're also going to talk for the millionth time this offseason about Ryan Tannehill, because he said some stuff and some people didn't like it. And so we're going to tell you what you need to think about all of that, and we'll do it in just one moment. You're listening to No Nonsense, a Tennessee Titans podcast. So what's left after Kyle Phillips? What do we got left to discuss?
Theo Jackson, who Vols fans are very familiar with. I've never seen play. And Chance Campbell, who I is actually very interesting.
Game-changing type of talent there. No, I'm kidding. But I think a lot of people like the Theo Jackson pick. Of course, he has the local tie, grew up in Nashville. But some people started to talk about, hey, maybe he could play the Dane Cruikshank role, because he did a lot of different things for Tennessee defensively, played some different positions. I'm going to be honest, I don't know a whole lot about the linebacker, Chance Campbell. It was fun to make jokes when they drafted him about, like, hey, the Titans finally got the inside linebacker everyone said they needed. But, you know, the sixth round, because they didn't make a seventh round pick. Sixth round, like, it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to let Will talk about Theo Jackson, because I've literally never seen him play, so I don't even know. But Chance Campbell is very interesting to me, just because he moved from Maryland to Ole Miss and was just so productive in a tougher conference in the SEC. I mean, he got six sacks, 109 total tackles, 12.5 for loss, three fumble recoveries, two forced fumbles. He's a big guy. He's like 6'2", 6'3", 235 pounds. I just find that profile very interesting. And you know, the Titans have had a lot of success finding some of these productive linebackers like Jayon Brown and David Long, who were very good in college, but weren't necessarily prototypical linebackers, and they were kind of undersized. Campbell's not undersized, but he was also very productive in the one season in the SEC where he was a full-time player. So I'm intrigued by this pick. I don't know if it's going to amount to anything, but given the Titans' track record with finding good linebackers later in drafts, I think he's a guy who could make an impact at some point in his Titans career.
Yeah, I mean, of the two picks, like, my heart likes the Theo Jackson pick more, just because, you know, the Tennessee bias in me. But, like, Campbell, I think, is the better actual pick. Like, you talk about drafting athletic linebackers on day three. Like Matias was just talking about it. Like, the Titans really don't miss. Like, they've only done it twice, and it was David Long and Jayon Brown. So it's like, when they do it, and when they have like crazy RAS, I don't have his RAS score pulled up, but I remember he was really athletic. Like, when they have those things, you should take notice. Like, once is a fluke, twice is a pattern. Like, three times is like, okay, pay attention. Like, this is what they're going to try to do. So I think he has a real chance to actually take that same path and be a special teams guy that we see in the preseason and we say, wow, that guy's really good. And then we see him sparingly throughout the year and we ask for them to play him more. And then he has to depend on injuries in front of him to get on the field. But he is interesting to watch. I'll talk a little bit more about Jackson just because I have seen him play. Like, he had a real tough 2020, but really, so did every Vol defender. Like, they just didn't look like they were having fun. Like, I don't know. Like, it was a bad situation there. Like, it is what it is. Like, no need to look too much into it. But he looked good this year. Like, he plays, like, he's kind of got that versatile body type and, you know, moderate. I mean, not moderate is probably too mean, but like, he's got good enough athleticism to play, you know, that Dane Cruikshank. Like, you can line him up at corner. Like, that's the same process they use with Imani Hooker, but I don't want to say Imani Hooker because Imani Hooker turned out so great. Like, but he's one of those guys where if he had a Dane Cruikshank career and by his third or fourth year he was contributing as a sub package player, it wouldn't surprise me because he can keep himself afloat with his ability to play special teams. And one of the things that the Titans said when they drafted him is they would ask the Vols coaches, you know, individually about different guys and say, like, hey, what do you think about this guy? And they would just keep bringing Theo Jackson up. Like, they would keep talking about how much they liked him, how committed he was, like, how much he liked, you know, how much he enjoyed the process of everything. And, you know, in the sixth round, taking a guy with versatility, athleticism, special team traits, and whose coaches like are clearly like pulling for him to get drafted, like, I mean, there's much worse ways to spend those picks. So I like that. You know, it's the first time in, I think, over a decade maybe that they've drafted anybody from Tennessee. So, you know, I like that, and I hope that works out, and I hope they can get some more hometown stuff going. So, I like the pick, but if I wasn't, you know, from, you know, if I didn't go to the University of Tennessee, like, I probably wouldn't know much about him either.
Well, give us some intel on the undrafted free agents quickly as well.
So, like they always do, they had two good defensive linemen that will probably make the team and be super cheap and be better than some guys that were drafted in the top 50, because that's kind of what they've done over the past years with Tart and Naquan last year. They got Jaden Peavy from Texas A&M, and he's got real long arms, and he's got kind of a bigger body type. I like Haskell Garrett more, the guy from Ohio State, even though I think Peavy had higher like rating on the consensus board. But Haskell Garrett's weird, right? So he plays like 4-I and 3 a lot, and he seems athletic enough to do what the Titans want out of like their Danico Autry, like, hybrid defensive end, defensive tackle. Whereas I think Peavy's more of like, you know, that Naquan Jones type, like, I'm going to play shade or one technique. But I'm interested to see how he plays, because I could see them moving him around more, and that would let, it's wishful thinking at this point to assume he'll make the roster. But like, if he makes the roster, it gives you more, a more specified role for Weaver, where he's just going to play edge and you don't have to try to like kick him into defensive tackle to make him more valuable. David Anani from Houston is an edge who has traits that are cool and got like, I think he had like a fifth round grade from Dane Brugler. So that's something to watch. But Reggie Roberson is a wide receiver from SMU. He has injury problems, so who knows if he's ever back to full strength. But I think he had 270-something yards on Memphis in 2020. and like he looks fantastic. Like good effort blocking, like has the speed like to get behind fast defensive backs who seem to be able to handle their business against other teams. Like, I mean, he looked good. I think he had like nearly 700 yards in back-to-back seasons, even though he dealt with multiple injuries. But he's a guy that you kind of have to compare to Marcus Johnson, where it's like, you may never see him. He may play, you know, one game. He may play no games. But if he, but when he plays, he has the ability to make big plays. And not because he's necessarily the fastest guy on the field or because he does any one thing well, but because he seems to have the right combination of skills and, you know, effort that make him a big play guy. So I'm interested to watch him versus, you know, a thinner, I guess, wide receiver five through whatever on this depth chart. Like that, those guys, like if he can beat out one of those guys to become, you know, a special teams player, developmental guy, blah, 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 that kind of thing. But those are the guys to watch. Roberson from SMU, the wide receiver, PV and Garrett, the defensive lineman, and Ann and I from Houston, the edge.
It's time to talk about Ryan Tannehill.
Yay.
I know Will's pumped.
So,
yeah, it's going to be awesome.
Let's start with the mentorship comment. And here's what I'll say about it. The sentiment is, he's correct. I don't know that he worded it terribly well, because it is true that Ryan Tannehill's job is not to mentor Malik Willis. That is Pat O'Hara's job, the quarterback coach. Ryan Tannehill's job is to prepare to win games. So that demarcation is correct. I think the fans who came away and said or thought, this is terrible, can't believe he said that, part of it is there is a group of people, a large one, that is just looking for any reason to get more mad at Ryan Tannehill than they already were, right? He's become an easy target. But I think a lot of those people believed or perceived by Tannehill's comments that he will under no circumstances help Malik Willis. When what Tannehill, and perhaps, you know, the more I'm sort of saying this out loud, perhaps it wasn't even a problem on Tannehill's part in terms of the wording. The takeaway was incorrect, because I think the takeaway assumes that he will not mentor Malik Willis, when the sentiment And what he said was, that's not really my job. That he didn't say I won't. He did say, you know, if Malik Willis can learn from me, that's great. But you know, Ryan Tannehill doesn't need to be spending extra time at the facility to mentor Malik Willis. Ryan Tannehill has a family. Ryan Tannehill has games to win. That's Pat O'Hara's job, to mentor. Now I'm sure if Malik Willis goes to Ryan Tannehill and says, hey man, I'm just having trouble figuring out how to beat cover three with a quick out, you know, whatever. And Tannehill says, well, here, let me tell you what I usually do. Like, those conversations are going to happen. Tannehill's not going to say, nah, you can figure it out. I think what he meant, and perhaps he could have explained it better. I think the problem is he just sort of let it sit, and he's not saying the things that I'm saying right now. But that's not what's happening here. He's just not going to go out of his way to do it, because he doesn't have to, and he really shouldn't. He's got bigger priorities.
Yeah, I agree, and it's just, it's gotten blown out of proportion, but I think everything around the Ryan Tannehill discourse has gotten blown out of proportion this offseason. So, man, I don't know. Like, it's really not a big deal. It really is not his job to mentor him. Sure, he could help him out, and I think he will. I mean, even Jonnu Smith came out to Ryan Tannehill's defense and said he learned a ton from Tannehill, and he was a great, you know, type of mentor. So, I don't know. I feel like everyone kind of overreacted to this. I agree Tannehill probably didn't word it correctly, but I mean, it is what it is. And this is something that everyone should kind of move past. But it's going to linger just because of that playoff game. Like, if Tannehill doesn't throw those interceptions, like, none of this is happening. But that's what it is, and that's what's going to keep happening. Every single thing he says, any bad play, negative play that he has, it's going to get, you know, magnified just because he's kind of on the hot seat. So it's unfortunate, really, because he's really done a lot of things right, and he's continued to do them right. And I don't think he was in the wrong with his comments at all. In fact, I appreciate it. I appreciated the honesty. Like, how many times have we called for coaches and players to, like, just be transparent and stop, you know, BSing the media and everyone with their coach speak answers that are so boring? Finally, like, a player comes out and says, no, like, it's not my priority. Like, but it's not enough. It's not enough for people. So that part's annoying, but it's really not like his priority is to win football games for the team and be the best quarterback for the team that he could be. So I don't know. I don't care about these comments, but everyone else seems to care.
I mean, it's so, so stupid. Like, the part of the Tennessee fan base that's like, anything Tannehill does is bad. Like, you're the worst. Like, understand that I hate you. Like, truly, in the fiber of my being, I think you make everybody look bad. Because it does. Here's the thing, right? So, if he comes out to say, hey, I just wanted to let everybody know, like, I didn't mean to say it in a way where it implied that I wasn't going to help Malik out. Like, I think he's got a ton of potential. He's a great, you know, from everything I've heard, he's a great kid. I can't wait to work with him. The next comment would be, wow, he sounds like somebody who's scared that he might lose his job. Like, the whole thing is, it's drummed up controversy that doesn't mean anything. It is nothingness wrapped in stupid takes. Like, it makes me so incredibly angry, because you just, like, when you say these things, it makes all Titans fans, like, look stupid by association. You are embarrassing the franchise. Like, it is incredibly aggravating. So, you know, that's kind of the box you're in. Because success determines everything. Like, you don't actually care if Tannehill mentors anybody. Like, you were somebody who thought it was awesome that Peyton Manning would, like, lock other quarterbacks out of the quarterback room when he was at Tennessee, and then in Indianapolis he would never let anybody take reps with the ones, and he wouldn't help people behind him, and their job was to help him, you know, look at formations. Like, same thing with Tom Brady, who notoriously, like, does the same thing and got Jimmy Garoppolo kicked out because he heard that the Patriots liked him. And that, you know, it's like this happens everywhere, and the people who are honest tell you, and they say that, and then everybody says, wow, you know, he's just a great competitor, you know, unless you don't like him, and then you say, wow, that guy's a jerk. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger has been the worst teammate to his, like, not only the rest of his team, like, very few people there like him, you know, and none more than his backup quarterbacks when, like, Mason Rudolph came in and he was, like, asked about him, and he would just, like, laugh and just, like, I mean, basically just, like, trash him and, you know, give the backhanded compliments and all that kind of stuff. Now, that's why you shouldn't care what he said, like, whether he gave you the truth or whether he lied like everybody else, you were going to be mad anyway. Here's the reason why you really shouldn't care. Because Ben Arthur did a great job with this, where he tweeted out a quote from, this was at the Senior Bowl, and he was Tannehill, and just, like, you know, the future of the quarterback position. And the quote is, none of the players are getting any younger. That's the nature and the circle of life in the National Football League. We tell the players that. The veteran players that are in our meeting room, their job is to not let the younger players come in and take their job. The younger players, their job is to carve out a role on the team to try to have a career as a professional football player. So it's like he went into a meeting and talked to John Robinson about this, and he just used the same quote that he got from, you know, the general manager, who I'm sure is in lockstep with the coach.
Yeah.
And they said, hey, like, your job is not to mentor this guy. Your job is to be as good as you can be to make this team as competitive as it can be for a Super Bowl. And if you do that, don't worry about it. We're not in a hurry to replace you. But if this guy comes in and is better, he's going to take your job because our jobs are on the line and we have to play the best option for us. So it's just crazy. Like, people, it's just a Rorschach test for whether you want to be part of this, like, group of people who just continually, like, sow discord and just try to get shock reaction, or you just hate Tannehill for whatever. But, I mean, whether you like it or not, it's not his job. The people employing him don't want him to do it. So it doesn't matter like, what your opinion is on this. It doesn't matter whether you're Kurt Warner in your ivory tower or whoever. Like, your opinion does not matter. Close your mouth.
Goodness. Your opinion does not matter. Close your mouth. No, but you're right. That is sort of the team talking point. That's a great point about what Robinson said is the job of incumbent players versus the job of rookies. So, yeah, I don't think there's a whole lot of disagreement from us there. What about the comment about, you know, having such a tough time after the loss? That was interesting to me. And, you know, another example of him keeping it real.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not too surprised. Like, he's never been a big social media presence, but we really didn't hear anything from him throughout the offseason, and I'm hoping that he didn't read any of the stuff that was going around on social media and on any of these talk shows, because they really hammered him hard. And look, I'm sure that Tannehill was the one who felt the worst after that playoff game. Like, we felt terrible because, you know, that was an awful way to go out. We had Super Bowl aspirations. Imagine Tannehill, who was like one of the most responsible people for that. I can only imagine what he went through. And it seems like he went to a pretty dark place. And for those of us who have been in those types of places before, it's really hard to bring yourself out of there. So hopefully he's doing better. I'm hoping that he had enough time off to kind of not think about it and kind of get back to doing the normal routine football kinds of things. And get back to playing his best ball, because when he's at his best, he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. And we've seen that during his time in Tennessee. So I'm hoping that's in the rearview mirror for him, and he can just get back to the basics and doing what he loves and doing what he's best at.
Yeah. Like, mental health is important. Everybody should, you know, take care of it. Like, it doesn't matter how much money you make, any of that kind of stuff. Like, you know, stress, toxic environments, all that, like, it's tough. Like, make sure you take care of that. Like, I mean, like you said, like, I mean, we can all understand, you know, not that it was on the front of our mind, but we can all understand, like, how it may have been a hard off season for him, and how, you know, just like all the Titans fans, like, he thought, okay, I'm finally going to get my weapons back. Like, we're going to go on this run. We'll be rested. And then it came to an abrupt end, and just, you know, it just a gut punch after, you know, like, literally dragging through all these injuries to get to the one seed, you know, beating Kansas City and Buffalo and, like, I mean, beating all these good teams. And then you make it, and then you lose to Cincinnati on a series where 9 times out of 10, you know, or if there's a healthy Derrick Henry or whatever, you run that and you kick a long field goal and you go to overtime if you miss it. But that's what you do. But whew, I mean, it sounds like it's hard on him. I mean, it's not going to make people any nicer, but it's why he's clearly not putting himself in the public eye if he doesn't have to.
All right. It is time for Stop the Nonsense. This episode flew by. I can't believe we've already gotten to the end. But we have. Who would like to start?
I could go. I've been noticing a weird trend lately on Twitter. I don't know if my algorithm is messed up or something. But it's not, because I just searched his name and it's real. There is a lot of Zach Wilson hype out there this offseason. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's happening. Like, I will agree with this. The Jets have done a pretty good job surrounding their quarterback with a nice offensive nucleus. Their receivers are good. They just drafted Breece Hall. Michael Carter was good in his rookie season. And they got Tyler Conklin and Uzoma at tight end. So that's great. A lot of mouths to feed. Zach Wilson was absolutely terrible last year. He was one of the worst quarterbacks in the league. He didn't show any signs of development, any signs of improvement. He got outplayed by Mike White, by Joe Flacco. Even Josh Johnson came in for a game and looked better than Zach Wilson. And I just don't understand. I don't understand what's happening. I don't know why people are acting like he's going to take off when I don't even think he was that great of a quarterback prospect to begin with. And he showed absolutely nothing in his rookie season. So it's weird. It's very weird. I don't know where this hype and narrative is coming from. Meanwhile, Justin Fields gets absolutely crapped on for his rookie season, and he's a lost cause, even though he looked better than Zach Wilson. But I don't know. This is just super weird. We'll see. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he comes out, throws 30 touchdowns, and I have to put my foot in my mouth. But just very weird happenings going on around NFL Twitter right now.
Yeah, and everybody like is fully circled back to where the Jets fans are all talking about how they think Corey Davis is underrated and all that. And like, I get it. Like, I love Corey Davis and all that. But I mean, if you pay a guy like, you know, the money he got paid, and you know, you feature him like that, like I don't know if you can call him underrated. But I'll go ahead and go with mine. I told y'all about this a little earlier before we started recording the podcast, and it's that time of year where the over-under win totals are getting posted and everybody's saying, you know, would I take this bet or that bet? And I was listening to a podcast today and they were talking about the betting odds for Super Bowl titles. And they were talking about, you know, which kind of long shots they could see going to the Super Bowl. And the names that they said were the Colts, which... We've been over this before. Nobody actually watches the Colts. They just assume they're good and are shocked every year when they're not in the playoffs, or when they get, you know, one and done, or you know, they find out they had a losing season or whatever. And then they said the Ravens, which I don't, you know, that's whatever. Like, I, you know, maybe Lamar Jackson gets hot again and remembers how to play and stays healthy, and they've got a good coaching, you know, good coaching staff. They've got, you know, some interesting players, all that, even though they don't have any wide receivers or anything like that. But, you know, okay, like, that's fine. But then the next one they said, do you want a real long shot? I could see the Jets winning the Super Bowl. And to your point, like, we have not talked about this part of it yet, Matias, but to your point, they said, you know, second-year quarterbacks, they really get a big boost. And, you know, I really like what Zach Wilson has around him, and I think, you know, he can take the next step. And I'm like, did we not watch Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson last year? Like, they were – Mac Jones is in that same division. Like, he would have to beat Mac Jones. And Mac Jones was better at every aspect of playing quarterback than either of those guys. And it's just this delusion – where everybody like has gotten tired of saying the things over and over that they've already said, that they just go a little bit insane and they start saying, like, you know who I could see winning the Super Bowl? the Jaguars. And it's like they just make these like storylines that don't make any sense, and it drives me crazy. But it, like, for your long shots to be the Colts, who, by the way, the Colts would have to go through all these new superpower like AFC teams too. Like, it's not like they would just to win the AFC South. Like, this is to go to and win the Super Bowl. Like, and then the same thing with the Jets. It just is all crazy to me.
It's filling time.
The Jets went 4-13 last year. The Jets. I don't. It's absolutely crazy.
It's filling time. Filling time.
Like this. Like May, you still have a lot of draft stuff to talk about. But man, June and July are coming, and it's only going to get worse.
Well, that's why we take the month of June off. Of no nonsense. Yeah. So here's mine. Earlier today, I'm watching YouTube, and an ad comes up. And it is one of the dumbest ads I've seen recently. It's an ad for DoorDash, the meal delivery service. And what happens in this is you hear the doorbell ring and someone is delivering DoorDash. And the person delivering DoorDash to this person in the commercial is Atlanta Falcons quarterback Desmond Ridder. And when he walks up to the porch, he sets the bag of food down. And it plays the ESPN draft noise, the ba-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, right? So that happens. So just to recap, Desmond Ridder delivering DoorDash, sets it down, the ESPN draft chime plays. And then it pops up on the screen, the text, Desmond Ridder, former DoorDash driver, current NFL quarterback. And then it said something along the line, and then that went away, and it said something along the lines of, you can chase your dreams too with us. As if they were trying to make a connection between Desmond Ridder driving for DoorDash and being a third-round pick of the Atlanta Falcons. It was patently ridiculous and odd, I thought.
You know what's crazy? I actually saw that commercial, but I was barely paying attention, and the only thing I remembered was the sound, the ESPN draft sound.
Yeah, so
I didn't even realize Ridder was on it.
The first time I saw it, that's what happened. I just sort of passively ignored it, but then it came on a second time. I'm like, okay, what is this? And I leaned in, and I'm like, oh my gosh, that's terrible.
I mean, I've always said, like, don't focus about Alabama or, you know, USC or what school you go to. Just make sure you've got a good, like, DoorDash rating, and GMs will find you. Like, I've always said that.
Oh dear. Alright, that's gonna do it for this episode. We'll see everyone next time. For Will and Matthias, I'm Luke, reminding you and everyone else in the sports world to stop the nonsense.